from the beginning of their struggle in liberating the occupied lands until the day of their martyrdom. Israel thought that by burying the body of Sayyid Nasrallah under 83 tons of explosives that it ended the resistance. But what it did not know was that it actually buried the seeds of resistance that will keep growing. Rachel Hamdouin, New York.
Catastrophic humanitarian conditions in Gaza continue to claim more civilian lives amid repeated Israeli violations of the ceasefire agreement with Hamas. According to medical sources, three newborn babies froze to death on Monday due to severe cold and lack of shelter. The babies, who were less than 2 months old, lived in displacement tents in Gaza City with no heating. Meanwhile, Israeli forces continue to violate the truce by targeting Palestinian civilians in their homes in a number of areas, including the Al Zaytun neighborhood of Gaza City. Earlier, the regime's warplanes bombed the southern city of Rafah twice in less than an hour. According to health officials, five bodies were recovered from the rubble, while two Palestinians died of previous wounds. That brings the death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide to over 48,300, with nearly 111,800 others injured. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabeh joined us earlier with the latest details on Israel's ceasefire violations across the besieged territory. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli regime is still, as you know, blocking the humanitarian supplies and aid from entering Gaza Strip, which means more suffering for the Palestinian people because, as you know, the vast majority of the people are completely and 100% relying on those humanitarian supplies. And according to the stage one and the phase one of the ceasefire agreement, the Israeli regime was obliged to allow for those humanitarian supplies to flow smoothly into Gaza Strip. However, till this moment, the Israeli regime is still procrastinating and allowing for those humanitarian essentials and needs into Gaza Strip, particularly when it comes to the proper shelters of the mobile homes and the caravans that the people are still in a dire need to in Gaza Strip. So once again, thousands of the Palestinian families are still suffering in these excruciating circumstances and conditions that are still afflicting them as a result of the perishing cold, first of all, and the lack of, as you know, the basic humanitarian essentials. We are talking about roughly a month into the ceasefire agreement. However, nothing is significantly changed for the Palestinian people here on the ground. Needless to mention that the Israeli brutalities are still ongoing, particularly when it comes to Rafah City, which is still the focal point of those non-stop Israeli violations.
Among the numerous infrastructures targeted by the Israeli regime during its genocidal campaign is a cultural center in Gaza City. The center served as a vital place for Palestinians' gatherings hosting various cultural and social ceremonies. Our Gaza correspondent Qada Ibrahim has visited the site of the targeted cultural center and has spoke to a number of Palestinians there.
The more we walk and move across the popular streets of Gaza City, the more destruction unfolds. This place is Rashad Shawa Cultural Center. This place has been the inspiring hub of culture and educational gatherings in Gaza. Many art exhibitions, film screenings, and even school graduations were held here. This was a place full of life, youth energy, and inspiration. The Israeli bombs decided in November 2023 to mute it and to brutally turn it into wreckage and ruins.
The Israeli occupation targeted everything during its war on Gaza, everything literally. All the international institutions, healthcare institutions, and the cultural institutions were deliberately targeted by the Israeli bombs. This Israeli occupation wanted to obliterate the Palestinian identity. However, it cannot be erased from the hearts of our people.
The destruction of such a place asserts the idea that the Israeli regime is aiming at annihilating the Palestinian society with all its factions and social layers. It also aims at defacing the beautiful sites engraved in the Palestinian collective memory, to punish the coming generations as well as the past generations without any military purpose, but just for destruction. The bombing and the destruction of Rashad al-Shawa Cultural Center, alongside with dozens of cultural centers across the Gaza City, cannot be separated from the broader context of the Israeli objectives of the war, which is to destroy Gaza with all its culture and social pillars and to kill any aspect of life for the Gazans. Ghada Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Another Palestinian abducted by Israeli forces from the Gaza Strip has died due to mistreatment and torture by Israeli forces in a regime jail. Two Palestinian prisoners' right bodies slammed the death of 35-year-old Musab Hani Haniya, who was the father of a 9-year-old child. They said Haniya was not suffering from any significant health issues before his detention. Haniya's death has increased the number of Palestinian abductees dying of systematic torture in Israeli prisons since the onset of the regime's genocide in Gaza to 59. At least 38 of fatalities are related to Palestinians abducted from Gaza. The rights bodies voiced grave concern over the dangerous upsurge in the number of Palestinians dying in Israeli jails. They said thousands of civilians are still languishing in Israeli imprisonment and are subjected to torture, starvation, medical neglect, and contagious diseases. Political analyst Sakina Dutt, who joined us earlier to share her insight on this story. She says mistreatment of Palestinian abductees in Israeli jails is against normal human behavior. Let's hear more.
This is not just to say in the context of because, you know, the Zionists are perpetrating these tortures against Palestinians, but genuinely, psychologically, if you study not just those in power and those in the IDF and IOF forces, but general local population, anyone who lives in Israel, at least the majority of them, their mentality and their psychology is really deranged. And there's a lot of discussion happening about, you know, what is it that makes people these kind, because it's not a human trait. A normal human being has got a conscience within themselves, and it is not a common human factor to be conducting this kind of atrocities on another people. The fact that, you know, the population would defend something like rape of prisoners just tells you this society is really, really sick. I think what is missing, the missing link, is that the people are aware of the fact that the Zionists are really demonic people, but there isn't yet a system. People haven't found a way to take action against them. But sooner or later, this will happen, because this kind of a society really cannot exist. If not from outside, they will implode from within, because all the characteristics of these people are really sickening.
People in the southern Spanish city of Cadiz have once again taken to the streets to denounce Israel's occupation against Palestinians and its genocide in Gaza. The rally in Cadiz was part of nationwide protests in Spain, where calls have grown on the government to stop arms transfer to Israel. Alberto Garcia tells us more.
Protests have taken place in different cities across Spain at the weekend to denounce US-backed Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in Gaza. In the southern city of Cádiz, the demonstration began at Plaza San Antonio, with participants dressed in black as a sign of mourning and protest. The rally was held in response to a call by the BDS movement, as well as RESCOP and Cádiz with Palestine groups.
We take to the streets to denounce the Spanish government's complicity in the genocide in Palestine. After 16 months of protest, we demand an end to the arms trade and transfer. Recently, 60,000 pieces of military equipment were sent from Zaragoza, and Algeciras port continues to facilitate their transfer. We will keep mobilizing in solidarity with the Palestinian people and their fight for freedom.
The protesters demanded the Spanish government honor the international commitments under the Arms Trade Treaty and UN resolutions and enforce a comprehensive arms embargo with strict inspections at ports and naval bases.
In Cadiz and across Spain, support for Palestine remains unwavering. We will continue taking to the streets for as long as necessary to denounce complicity with Israel, whose arms trade sustains the genocide and occupation against the Palestinian people.
Our union has always stood with Palestine and condemns Israel's genocide, enabled by Western complicity, especially from the US. Without its support, this crime would not be possible. Today, the US and Israel are the greatest threats to global peace.
The demonstrators strongly condemned the policies of US President Donald Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, holding them responsible for escalating violence against the Palestinian people. BDS and RESCOP call for all organizations and individuals who stand for justice and Palestinian freedom to join this mass demonstration. In the face of genocide, silence is complicity. Gathers is rising. No more weapons, no more deals, no more support for Israeli apartheid. Alberto Garcia, Cadiz.
The Palestinian Islamic Jihad has condemned unprecedented deployment of Israeli tanks in the occupied West Bank. It said the move is part of a major offensive by the regime to displace Palestinians and annex the territory. The Islamic Jihad said it is the first time that the regime has deployed tanks in the West Bank since early 2000s. The movement denounced Israel's new act of aggression, saying it is aimed at uprooting Palestinians from their land. The Islamic Jihad has also slammed Israel for attempting to consolidate its military domination by creating settler corridors that separate West Bank cities and their camps. The comments came after the International Committee of the Red Cross expressed deep concern over the impact of Israel's ongoing military aggression against Palestinian civilians in Jenin, Tulkarm, Chubus, and other locations in the northern West Bank. It said many civilians are now taking shelter in crowded mosques and schools and have no access to basic needs such as clean water, food, and medicine amid the winter cold. And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Take care and bye-bye for now.
The Third Soap Media Festival. The Third Soap Media Festival, with the theme of media's role in the New World Order, will be convened in two sections. The main section and a special section focusing on Palestine, under the following formats and genres. Television series, television programs featuring panel discussions, combined format television programs, documentaries, news reports, motion graphics, written content, radio programs and podcasts, social media, a special section focusing on Palestine, cinematic film, television documentary, video clips, short film, short animation, graphic design, news blogs. An important section in this year's SOAP Media Festival is the international market section, which brings together buyers and distributors of home-produced Iranian as well as international films in Tehran. This is the first time that such a section has been added to the SOAP Festival, and it is an important media event. You're very welcome to visit the festival and join the discussions regarding media's role in the shaping of a new world order. Those who want to participate in this international festival have until 5th of March 2025 to send in their media productions, including films, animations, clips, documentaries, etc. For more information, please visit the SOAP Media Festival website. The festival will be held on 5th of May 2025.
The limelight.
The Zionist regime has shot 8-year-old Jannat in the face, and the Western media ignored it, as it always do. Jannat Metur's life was forever altered when an Israeli soldier's bullet struck her, leaving her blind and shattered by trauma. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Jannat never imagined that her room would become the site of a terrifying memory that would change her life forever. In a single moment, the Palestinian girl was subjected to a life-altering accident in her own room, losing her sight in both eyes, all because of the Zionist regime army bullets. Her life and the life of her family was completely turned upside down, forever shattering the dreams of this once cheerful, energetic girl. On February 11th, Jannat Matureit was playing with her two younger brothers in the room when she heard the sound of the Zionist regime army storming her town of Sair, east of Al-Khalil. As the eldest and only sister, driven by love and compassion, she rushed to get her three-year-old brother Muhammad off the bed and away from danger. She then approached the window, intending to close it. Her father, Faisal, was with her mother in the living room when they heard Jannat scream, her voice filled with terror. They rushed to her room and found her lying in a pool of blood. Faisal said, I saw a fountain of blood on my daughter's head. I couldn't see her face or features. Her two brothers were crying from the horror of the sight. She was crying and screaming for help. An Israeli soldier bullet had struck her while she was trying to close the window to protect her brothers. Her father picked her up and ran outside, trying to get her to the nearest hospital. However, the Zionist regime troops had surrounded the house, blocking anyone from leaving. Faisal was forced to keep her on the stairs until the soldiers allowed them to depart. More than half an hour later, they were finally given permission to leave, but without an ambulance. They had no choice but to use her uncle's vehicle, Faisal explained. Because there was a closed iron gate at the entrance to our town, we couldn't reach the hospital in Al-Khalil for another 20 minutes, taking longer alternative routes. After several tests, doctors discovered that the bullet had penetrated Jannat's scalp, causing a deep wound. Fragments had also damaged her eyes, leading to the loss of her sight. The left eye has no chance of recovery, while the right eye has a slim chance. These days are critical in determining its future. Faisal added, Jannat underwent multiple surgeries to remove the fragments. Afterward, the doctor told me there was little hope of her sight returning, even in one of her eyes. I felt a tear in my heart, and the tears wouldn't stop. The child endured numerous side effects from the injury, such as severe headaches lasting for hours, only manageable with painkillers that don't always bring relief. Another consequence of the injury was psychological trauma. Jannat's love for her home and room turned into a constant fear. She even asked her father to buy a new house elsewhere. Her father explained, to this day, she hasn't entered the room where she was injured, and she constantly asks us to keep its door closed. Even though she cannot see it, she feels deep fear because of what happened. Jannat's two younger brothers were also deeply affected by the shock. They cry whenever they see Jannat lying with bandages over her eyes, remembering the horrific sight of blood. Jannat was the heart of the house. Her spontaneous laughter, charming smile, and boundless energy lighting up every room. As the first child, She was especially dear to her parents, whose lives had shifted as they began helping her with everything. She loved her teacher and was an excellent student in the third grade, beloved by all her teachers. But after her injury, she was forced to stay at home for treatment, Faisal shared. One day after her injury, she said to me, "I want to go to school. I don't like being away from it or my friends." Her words tore my heart apart. She doesn't yet realize she has lost her sight and believes it's temporary, which saddens us even more. Despite her young age, Jannat used to help her mother care for her two brothers, who were very attached to her. Now, they all live in a tragic reality that they must face together. When the war on Gaza began and the Israeli army intensified its raids on villages and towns in the West Bank, I transferred Jannat from the school near an Israeli barrier, fearing for her safety in the case of any confrontations. I never imagined that an Israeli bullet would pierce the window of her own room and strike her while she was at home, her father said, his voice filled with sadness. On the same day Jannat was injured, the Zionist regime army killed 19-year-old Abdullah Al-Farouk with a bullet to the chest and obstructed the ambulance from reaching him.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, respect for all people. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab, here on IRB English Radio. So I've titled the topic for today, Respect for All People. And I'm going to actually narrow it down a little bit. So I'm talking, first of all, about a little incident from the life of the famous martyr Ibrahim Hadi. So during the War of Holy Defence, also called the Imposed War, some of the Iraqi captives had been brought to the city where he was. And so he had responsibility to look after them. And so what was happening was that, so he gave them food. And so obviously, so this meant that the captives were also sort of, in a sense, attracted to this good behavior, this good akhlaq of his. And he'd also talk with them. So he was displaying just such good care and behavior towards them that they even wanted to fight with him against the Baathis. So, and you know, this is something, there were some very, let's say, meaningful outcomes of his behavior towards captives, for example, towards their, like their enemies, basically, such that some of the Iraqis obviously did fight with them. Then they went and they formed a unit, and yeah, some of them became some of the sort of very famous martyrs on the Iranian side. So, but obviously this is about, what does this mean, respect for all people? So this is very specific, and look, even nowadays in the region, we see this, that we have very strict rules, even with enemies, and especially when we're taking, for example, what we call captives, or prisoners of war. And this is spelled out for us very much so in the Quran. And Imam Ali would talk about this, how we're supposed to treat the captives in war, for example. Welcome back. This is A to Z and RB English Radio. And so I'm talking about respect for people, and I've been talking about how, for example, Ibrahim Hadi, the famous martyr, would treat the captives of war from Iraq during the War of Holy Defence. And obviously, so respecting people and also respecting and caring properly about the captives, the prisoners of war. This sort of goes together, and there's two strands to this, obviously. One is that we appreciate the other person's dignity as a human being. So even if this is our enemy, even if this is a prisoner of war. And there's another element in there that is really important, because imagine if, you know, and let's just sort of talk about this in a more general way. If we are, let's say, whether you want to think about people you really don't like or call them enemies, maybe there's just people you really don't like at work. And, you know, obviously we wouldn't. So let's take it down to the micro level. First, you've got people at work. Maybe you've got a boss, or maybe you have some very troublesome, let's say, members of family in the bigger extended family, and you're thinking, oh, this person's akhlaq is terrible. Why can't I behave like that towards them? But no, we shouldn't be like that. If we then counter them with really good akhlaq, very often, not always, of course, but very often, that sort of stops them from even being able to sort of continue with bad akhlaq. Because it surprises people. It's difficult, genuinely, for people to counter, like, say, kindness with unkindness. So, you know, we might already sort of be doing the right thing just through doing that. And obviously, if we take it to the bigger level, macro level, again, imagine, obviously, if we as Muslims, if we're treating, you know, in the political arena, if we've got prisoners of war, if we have captives, you know, if we are the ones who are treating them really well, exactly the way we should, as per the Quran, then obviously people will be looking at us and thinking, oh, look at that. Isn't that beautiful? Look at how well they're being treated. That is Islam. Because, you know, as Muslims, both in our small spheres and in the global arena, it's our role to always be the best people we can be. Every single one of us is representing and propagating Islam through our behavior, inshallah. So thank you for listening in for today, and I look forward to welcoming you back to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Zionist regime's genocidal aggression in Gaza has resulted in the killing of some 150 academics, 760 teachers, more than 12,000 students, and the complete or partial destruction of 494 schools and higher education institutes. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Salma al-Hindi, 21, is facing an uncertain future. A math undergraduate, Salma saw her university, Al-Azhar, destroyed in November 2023 when the Zionist regime military bombed the campus. Since then, and displaced with her family from their home in the Al-Nasr neighborhood of Gaza City, to a tent inside the grounds of Al-Nasr Pediatric Hospital, Al-Hendi has struggled. She asked in January, when talking to the Electronic Intifada, "How am I supposed to study? For the past 15 months, my family and I have been living in a tent without electricity, internet, or a computer." To make matters worse, Al-Hendi said her course textbooks were lost forever when her family's house was bombed in October 2023. She's far from alone. The Zionist regime airstrikes and shelling, along with controlled demolitions, have completely or partially destroyed every single one of Gaza's 12 higher education institutes. According to the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, 88,000 university students have been unable to pursue their studies, and at least 555 students from Gaza have had to forego on the opportunity to use scholarships they had been offered abroad. Al-Hendi told the Electronic Intifada, "I don't know what to do. I'm worried about my future, which is slipping away before my eyes. The Israeli war on Gaza has destroyed the future of thousands of university students. The occupation has destroyed everything in Gaza." The situation hasn't changed after the declaration of a ceasefire and the supposed suspension of the Zionist regime's attacks. She said she's still busy helping provide for her family's daily needs, such as finding water and collecting firewood to cook food and to heat their tent. Despite the difficulties, Al-Hendi said she was not giving up and will find a way to complete her studies. She hoped foreign governments, aid agencies, and universities would step in to support education in Gaza by any means possible. As far back as April, a panel of United Nations experts suggested Israel's systematic destruction of education institutions could be considered an intentional effort to comprehensively destroy the Palestinian education system in Gaza. Taysir Al-Saif, 23, was on the verge of graduating with a degree in information technology from University of Palestine, destroyed in January last year, when she and four of her family members were displaced to the Deir al-Balah camp in Az-Zaytun neighborhood in eastern Gaza City on November 8, 2023. Al-Saif said in January about quitting the program after a month, "I joined the e-learning system at the university, but I couldn't continue due to the lack of internet, the power outages, and the general insecurity." She recalled walking some 3 miles every day to reach a cafe with a strong enough internet connection for her to download the materials and study summaries provided online by her professors. But these efforts also proved unsustainable, as it cost her $3 an hour to use the internet. Al-Saif said, "We were supposed to be taking our final exams for the first semester these days. Everything has been postponed, but until when? No one knows." She said she hoped the ceasefire could provide her and other students with opportunities to resume their education, even despite the wholesale destruction of universities. It will be a gradual process. The first realistic option would be to continue studying via online educational programs while educational institutions are rebuilt to allow students to gradually return. Temporary or alternative educational centers could also be constructed in Gaza. Al-Saif said she still considers herself lucky. Many of her fellow students were killed over the 15 months, and even after the ceasefire came into, Israeli regime attacks have continued and are a source of anxiety for everyone in Gaza. She asked, "How can a student study when they know they are at risk of being killed at any moment, with the constant threat of a missile possibly hitting their home or tent, or the homes and tents of their neighbors?" Nasser Reyounin, 29, was enrolled in a master's math program at the Islamic University of Gaza, which the Zionist regime military deliberately targeted in October 2023, destroying most of its buildings. He said, "I was supposed to graduate in the spring of 2024, but then my future was turned upside down, and my dreams changed from being an educated person to working in a cafe to provide for my family's basic needs." He described 2024 as a lost year. He said, "I lost my textbooks, I lost friends, I lost professors, and I don't know what will happen to us this year. Everything has evaporated." Ceasefire or not, the destruction in Gaza has been devastating. Reconstruction will be a massive task, and he feared it would be years before education could be properly restarted. He said, "The university can no longer be used for studying. Everything is destroyed. Classrooms, labs, all its facilities. Returning while things are in this condition is extremely difficult, and Gaza may need years to restore its education sector." Salah Abdulati, chairman of the International Commission to Support Palestinian Rights Group, accused the Zionist regime of trying to obliterate education in Gaza by specifically targeting higher education institutes. He said, "Targeting universities, schools, and academies is a violation of international humanitarian law and infringes on the right to education." Moreover, he added, "The deliberate targeting of universities is unlawful, as per Article 8 of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, which classifies deliberate attacks on civilian objects as war crimes and violations of the Hague and Geneva Conventions." With such clear breaches of international law, Abdulati said Israel must be held accountable, and individuals who issued, executed, or participated in such attacks should be prosecuted before the ICC. The Zionist regime's genocidal aggression has resulted in the killing of some 150 academics, 760 teachers, more than 12,000 students, and the complete or partial destruction of 494 schools and higher education institutes. Ala Bani Fadel, a professor of criminal law and human rights at Al-Najah National University, said on January 8, "By targeting universities in the Gaza Strip, the occupation deliberately contributed to the destruction of the academic environment, which has long been a significant source of motivation and innovation. The complete halt in the educational process has deprived the students of their right to education in both the present and future, as well as denying faculty members their right to work. In such a situation, distance learning becomes the only method for continuing coursework," he said. But like many other educators, Bani Fadel reported experiencing firsthand problems caused by inconsistent internet access, weak telecommunications, and frequent power outages. He said, "Gaza's universities will need a significant amount of time to restore their activities following the massive destruction they have endured." He said it was essential to encourage students to immediately enroll in Arab and international universities to complete their education. Academics must raise their voices and share their struggles with the world by communicating with human rights and academic organizations to highlight the devastating reality of the education sector in Gaza.
welcomed Israel Watch. The Hebrew media has been following the planting of explosive devices in Tel Aviv, the release of more captives as part of the first phase of the ceasefire agreement in Gaza, and the obstacles facing the negotiations for the second phase. Additionally, it has covered the new reality of southern Lebanon after the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the south, while keeping 5 occupied points within Lebanese territory. Joining me to discuss these topics, Mr. Ridwan Rizk, political analyst. Hello and welcome to this episode.
Thank you. Mr. Thanks. Ridwan. Thanks.
We begin with the planting of explosive devices on Israeli buses in Tel Aviv. According to the Israeli narrative, 5 explosive devices were planted on Tel Aviv buses, 3 of which exploded. One of them had a note written on it, "Revenge for Tul Karem camp in the West Bank." Do you think that the Israeli military correspondent provided the full story about the explosives that detonated the bus?
No, I don't think so, because what we have seen on TVs are what the military permitted to release as footage of the operations or the explosive, the missions that's done in Tel Aviv. But something stopped me and paid my, took my attention that the authorities in Israel captured one Israeli citizen involved in these explosives.
Yes.
So, and this is the most surprising issue that, took my attention to this, that this is, we are seeing something that we have never seen before. Many Israelis now are getting involved in cooperating with the resistance. We know that some Israelis were involved in spying on Israel for other countries, and some of them were cooperating, smuggling, arms to the resistance groups. And now we are seeing that one of the Israelis were captured. Suspect of getting or of his involvement in the explosives.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we are seeing something turning inside the Israeli society, that we are seeing cracks inside this internal
camp. And could it be read that it's an alarm or it's a warning of what is to happen next?
I can read it as a turning point that the Israelis are losing faith in their government and in their states, and now they are recalculating their presence in Palestine or
lack of trust, exactly,
and some of them are not accepting that this bloodshed took place in front of the world, and
yes.
Now the Jewish people are being hated or being disrespect around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So the image of Israel as a democratic state and the nice looking government. Now this,
but there was a quick exploitation of this incident, and they quickly went on to practice more aggression in the West Bank, as if they don't want to give it that much of attention.
Well, I think that the Israeli government now is running in a vicious circle, because the more that they do commit crimes and aggressions, they are being responded by more operations and more attacks from the resistance,
mm-hmm.
which is proves that this violence will not lead to any rest or peace inside.
As you're highlighting, it's a turning point, and it's a very important turning point, Mr. Ridwan. Well, all the Israeli anger that erupted after the handover of the 4 captives' bodies last Thursday has turned into a language of revenge against Hamas in the Hebrew media. In your opinion, what is the root of this anger and these calls for revenge, in your opinion?
Well, the question is, what can they do more than what they have done for the past 15 months? They occurred massacres in Gaza, massacres in Lebanon, now slaughtering the people inside the West Bank, inside the Tul Karem and Jenin camps, and what more can they do? I don't think this is just talks on TV to absorb the disappointment of the Israelis inside.
Does this reflect that the Israelis are actually shifting to the right wing, the extremist side, more than ever?
Well, now we are seeing that the form of the government. Well, the form of the government now it's never have been done or took place in Israel in its since the founding of Israel in 1948.
Yes.
Now we are seeing the extremists, rightists, are controlling or full control of the government, and this is a very good point for us because. These will not allow any a chance for any solutions in the future. And
how is it a good point, Mr. Ridwan?
Because I believe that struggle should be kept on. It's I'm not in the favor of the two solution states or any kind of an agreement which keeps the Israelis inside Palestine.
The two-state solution is not even considered by the Israelis. Not considered from the right-wing extremists.
Well, the extremists inside Israel now are revealing the real face of Israel.
Yes.
Are revealing the right plans behind founding Israel as a state. Now we were being fooled for the past 75 years. That we are against peace and we are not for the solutions,
mm-hmm.
and that was all lies. Now we are seeing the real face Israel, which is revealed by the extremists.
Can we say, do we have the right to say that Hamas is the reason for this turning point that you're highlighting and is the reason behind the Israelis' anger towards Netanyahu specifically?
I believe that's not only Hamas, it's
they exposed
the steadfast in Lebanon and in Gaza, now in West Bank, people are resisting and fighting now, which pushed the Israelis to ask the questions, questioning the future of the Israel, the people inside what's so-called Israel. So questioning the future, because as we know that in the northern Israel, in North Palestine, on all 48 or 50 settlements, the people are displaced and they are not willing to return to their settlements. And now when are they going to return to the settlements?
Mm-hmm.
Despite that, not only the settlers, 150 or 200,000, it's also raised the questions that all the military manufacturing,
yes.
and other manufacturers,
yes.
are totally paralyzed in that area.
And it's the same thing, lack of trust between the Israelis and their own government.
I believe this is the turning point of the whole issue.
Okay, on another note, the decision to start negotiations for the second phase of the Gaza agreement has not yet been taken. Since the second phase involves an agreement to end the war on Gaza, this is a challenge for the Israelis who want to conclude the first phase without linking it to the second phase, according to Tamir Hayman, the former head of military intelligence. According to Tamir Hayman, the second phase is a challenging phase because, in his own opinion, it will the Israeli entity will end the war on Gaza, and that's how he sees it, and that's very challenging to them. How would you comment on this?
Well, because that brings the end of the war or putting an end to this war.
With
on
what
Gaza.
Results?
Results that Israel will have to withdraw from all every part of Gaza with no checkpoints, with no points at all left inside Gaza. So Gaza will be cleaned from any presence of the Israeli army inside Gaza or around Gaza. So this is a very big achievement and a clear victory to the resistance in
and
Gaza.
And that's why they see it as challenging, because they did not achieve their own promises or objectives of this war?
They achieved nothing of this war at all. I believe it's a total defeat for the Israeli army inside mm-hmm. Gaza. Killing civilians does not mean anything in the military evaluations at all. When an Israeli army with this brutal machine, with all the help from the NATO countries and help from the Americans and their allies to destroy 80 or 85% of Gaza, killing 50,000 civilians and injuring 120,000. In the meaning of victory, it's nothing at all. So Gaza is out with a clear and divine victory against this brutal machine. Now the Israelis will have to ask themselves, what did we achieve out of this war?
Okay, so do you think that Netanyahu will facilitate or complicate the negotiations on the second phase?
No, I don't think that Netanyahu will
complicate. Because there are a lot of talks about that.
Netanyahu is, a person who is determined and pushed and backed by the Americans to continue on it for the new planning or the new drawing of the new Middle East. I believe that we will be waiting for a very difficult time ahead of us during the Trump presence in the White House, because Trump has his
own. So he is pressured to continue negotiations, especially on the second phase, in your own opinion?
I
because
think
many
that
are calling
Netanyahu
for de-escalation, and he's calling for an escalation.
I believe that Netanyahu will be looking for an excuse to withdraw from implementing the second phase of the negotiations.
So he will come up with excuses.
He will try to create some problems, the obstacles on going on with the second phase. And I believe that the people who are the countries who were the people who Qatar and Egypt who were the
mediators
cannot impose anything on the on the Israelis.
In any case, Netanyahu's conditions of disarming Gaza and removing Hamas and its leaders from the Strip will not be acceptable to Hamas. Thus, what the Israeli entity should do now is prolonging the first phase and releasing as many living Israeli captives as possible. What do you think of the Israeli correspondent's view that the Israelis' condition for negotiations on the second phase of agreement will lead nowhere, as he highlighted, if Hamas insists on rejecting Netanyahu's demand to disarm Gaza and remove its leaders?
Well, I believe that Netanyahu must be dreaming on his demands on Gaza. What has he to impose his demands on Gaza by disarming Hamas or disarming the resistance inside Gaza? If after 15 months of fighting, you couldn't disarm the.
But it's part of the negotiations deal.
It's the deal that now all the resistance group, let's make it very clear, that's all resistance groups in our area, let's say Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, or Palestine, are totally and absolutely convinced that any disarmament to any one of the groups, or laying down their arms, or surrounding or turning themselves into political movements, will bring catastrophe to those resistance, because they will not be existed at all. As we know, that's the new plan revealed by Trump now, that's by displacement or transferring the Shiite of Lebanon to other countries with tempting prices, offering thousands of dollars. Displacement,
tentative.
Sending them other to the other countries, only on one condition: laying down the nationality of the Lebanese nationality, and that will obtain a new nationality somewhere else, and that will be a total transfer.
Do you think that Netanyahu will insist on the fact that on his own conditions to end Hamas rule inside Gaza? And wouldn't that actually put a lot of obstacles in the second phase negotiations?
Of course, that Hamas will not accept any of these conditions. Hamas is there. Hamas are the people of Gaza. It's not Hamas, it's the movement. We must know and we must believe that.
So how do you think Netanyahu will react to that?
Well, Netanyahu has one choice by continuing the war and see if he can do this by force, or he will be forced to accept the presence of Hamas and the resistance inside Gaza. And we are talking about 2.2 million people in Gaza who are, raised one voice for the resistance inside Gaza, and they will not surrender to the Americans or to the Israelis. So the Americans and the Israelis and their Arab allies who are backing this plan will have one choice, either to eliminate or massacre, kill everyone in Gaza, or to accept the present and try to deal with it on the future.
Mr. Ridwan Rizak, a political analyst, thank you very much for joining us in today's episode. Our time is up. Thank you very much.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly, I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way? All covered up in a world that gives it all away. Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on iranradio.ir with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program again.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, we have talked about many issues of jurisprudential nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei so far, Sheikh Javid.
Sure.
And let's actually delve into some of the fundamental questions regarding taqlid, because that usually appears at the beginning of every risala you open up, right?
Right.
So let's start with the very basic idea or concept of taqlid. What is taqlid?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, taqlid is to follow mujtahid.
Mm.
There is nothing ambiguous about it, okay?
Yes.
And it's not good to make it very much complicated for our audience,
mm-hmm.
okay? The simple definition we can give about taqlid is to follow a mujtahid.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if you act according to a mujtahid's fatwa or whatever you call verdict, that's enough, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we call taqlid, okay?
Yes.
We are not going to look into the literal meaning of taqlid, okay?
Right.
Taqlid in its literal meaning has a different meaning, okay? Which we do not mean when we talk about taqlid, okay? We talk about taqlid in its technical or scientific or jurisprudential context.
Yes. You know, Sheikh Javid, a a long time ago, we've seen when a lot of these books, in fact, have been translated from Arabic and Persian, and these Muslims dominated areas, basically, into the Western world and their books and the languages.
Yeah.
And I've seen some, blatant mistakes, basically. It was so obvious, it was so vivid that you could see that this is a false and a blunder. They have translated taqlid into copying, imitation, and the like, which is totally wrong. We all know, right?
Yeah.
And following maybe is, you know, a